Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
The Rob Brown Show on your radio. It is the Fan Upstate. Happy Monday, people. Actually Monday, where we are both reacting to other people's overreactions and perhaps doing a bit of mild overreacting ourselves. You are welcome to do the same. 844-326-3663 is the number. 844-F-A-N-F-O-N-E. Call that number. It is also the number to the Hub City Spartanburger text line, 844-326-3663. Shoot us a text. We will read them on the radio program. We have jumped all over the map so far today, talked quite a bit of college ball back in hour number one, evaluated the AP Top 25. We'll get back to that a little bit later on in the program. This week felt like a settle-in week for college football. We are starting to see the teams that are actually good teams move up towards the top of the 25. We are starting to see some of the teams that are perhaps good but not great move to the middle. Some of the teams that were frauds out of the gate start to fall down towards the top. Penn State will continue to talk about that as the show rolls on. In the next segment, we will get a little NFL here on the broadcast. At the end of this hour, final segment of this hour, John Blau of the Post and Courier, he covers the Clemson Tigers, will get his thoughts on what went right, what can be improved on for the Tigers as they get set for a road trip to Boston College coming up this weekend. But as it is 8 a.m. on a Monday so good to me, it's time for the audio blitz. Some of the best audio we have picked up over the past 24 hours. I've got a handful, but there's a few that jump off the page at me. I played this one earlier in the show, but I would like to play it again for two reasons. Number one, because it fits exceptionally well in the audio blitz. And because number two, I got to give a shout out to Eric Collins. And I got to give a shout out to Aaron Collins. Some of you know Eric Collins because Eric Collins is the play-by-play announcer on the radio for the Charlotte Hornets. And over the past a lot of the time, Eric Collins has been most of the time the best part, sometimes the only good part of Hornets broadcast. Because while I do think the team is improving, they're not quite there yet. They're getting better. But they weren't a good team last year. So Eric Collins, the play-by-play voice for the Charlotte Hornets, got his opportunity to call his first NFL game this weekend, as he is a resident of Charlotte, North Carolina. They stuck him on the Hornets broadcast as they were at home hosting the Miami Dolphins. I started this game going, too much, bro. Like, even for me, even for a dude who gets yelled at for being too much. Extra is the word I've heard used, the adjective I've heard used to describe me many times.
It's an apt description.
I'm not even going to push back against it. It is absolutely an apt description of one Rob Brown. Even I was going, Eric, relax, my man. Like, you're not Gus Collins. But by the end of the third quarter, I was like, I think I'm an Eric Collins guy.
Gus Johnson.
Gus Johnson.
You say Gus Collins.
Oh, sorry. Gus Johnson, Eric Collins, Eric Collins, Gus Johnson. Love it. Absolutely love it.
All right. That's the absolutely second time I've heard it, and I loved it more the second time.
Yeah. It just gets better. Much like Collins in the broadcast. First quarter, I was like, hey, bro, settle down. Second quarter, I'm like, all right, this guy's gassed. I get it. I understand it. Third quarter, I was like, now I'm in. Now I'm in. Like, I was watching that game. I did a football party yesterday. It was seven or eight of us watching football together, and I had that game and the Saints game. They were both up on the screen, but I have an app on my phone that lets me point the phone at a TV channel, and then it plays the audio on my phone. And I was alternating back and forth between the Saints and the Panthers. So I checked in a few times, and by the end of the third quarter, I was like, yeah, I'm just listening to this guy. Like, he won me over in one game. Absolute electricity. Like, I love when a play-by-play guy loves football. And even for an NBA guy, I think he very much did. All right. There was another play-by-play guy who had a moment last night. Bills-Patriots. Sunday night. I've been waiting all day for Sunday night. I'm waiting all day for Monday night today. But I was waiting all day for Sunday night. In the Bills game, there was a spot where Josh Allen rolled out to the right. Nobody was available. And like a quarterback should do in that spot, he just sails the ball into the first row of the stadium. Well, if you are sitting in the first row of the stadium and you catch a ball out of the air from Josh Allen, you know, NFL guys are going to try to get you to give that ball back. Well, it was caught out of the air by a young guy in a jersey. And instead of waiting for security or an NFL staffer or a Bills staffer to approach him and say, hey, bud, we're going to need the ball back. Nah. This guy tucked that thing away, 5 points of contact, got out of the aisle to the stairs, and took off with the football, which led to an all-timer from Mike Tirico. Well done, Tirico. Well done. That's a great moment. Guy gets up, he's taking off the ball. One of his buddies in a Josh Allen jersey gets up, lead blocker up the aisle all the way to where you disappear into the bowels of the stadium. My dude was gone with that football. He's like, nope, I don't care what happens. And it ended up being a good decision because the Bills lost at home to the Pats. But my man said, I don't care what happens with this game. I don't care how it plays out. I don't care if we win, lose, tie. I caught a Josh Allen football. This thing's going home with me. Got up, took off, had the lead blocker. Tirico gave him the play-by-play call. It was fantastic. Hey, we talked about this one earlier in the show, too. Turns out, of the predictions, projections, and prognostications that I made to start the season, I got a lot right. And I got one very, very wrong. Turns out Penn State are frauds. Now, I came into the year thinking, you know, if there is a reason Penn State won't get it done, it is because Drew Aller historically does not perform in big games, which is why their game this weekend against unranked and winless UCLA did not draw my attention. Because, again, they are winless. And you may remember that not but a week ago, they moved on from their head coach to Sean Foster. They got an interim coach. Some other guys were let go. Some other guys were elevated. One of those guys was Jerry Neuheisel. Now, Jerry is the son of Rick Neuheisel, who, of course, spent some time with that school. Jerry was lined up as the offensive coordinator for the UCLA Bruins. And the Bruins put up 42 on Penn State. Took their first win of the season and handed Penn State back to back L's, not just an L at the crib to the Oregon Ducks, but they went on the road and allowed UCLA to get win number one. Now, this game stood out for a few reasons. Number one, obviously, because of the fact that now everybody knows that Pennsylvania State University is a fraudulent football team. They got exposed by the Ducks, and then UCLA said, oh, so that's how you do it. And UCLA did it. Number two, the reason is because Jerry Neuheisel was elevated from position coach to offensive coordinator for this game. And in his first game ever calling plays, his offense put 42 on the board against Penn State. Now, I might look at that and say, I get it. Penn State went up. They didn't have any film to watch of what this offense was going to look like with Jerry Neuheisel as the coordinator. Didn't know what the play calling was going to look like. But any credit that I coulda, shoulda, woulda given to Penn State for Jerry Neuheisel was gone. Because Jerry Neuheisel said in the postgame press conference this. Yeah, it did. My dude said, I'm a position coach. I've never worn the headset. I've certainly never worn the headset and called plays into it throughout the course of the day on at least three occasions, including one fourth down conversion. Jerry Neuheisel grabbed his little Waffle House menu, put it in front of his face to talk into the microphone, except for he forgot to flip the mic on the headset down in front of his face. So he was just calling the play to nobody. And then on at least two occasions that were evident on television, on at least two occasions, Jerry forgot to push the talk back button that actually transmits his voice into the helmet of his quarterback, Nico Iamaleava, which led to a situation where Nico was like hearing play call. All right, Nico, we're going to go with the split 42 XYZ banana 1497 spider C wide at 34-7 on two. And let's have to figure it out. And yet they hung 42 on Penn State.
All right, you're not being critical of him, are you? Because
no.
You and I both have made mistakes that
yes.
We should not make. And
we quite literally play a game as two decade-long broadcasters about how often we forget to crack the mic open. I'm not being critical. However, I do think you have to be critical of James Franklin and the Lions for letting that team with that coordinator put 42 on the board.
I think, let's see what he does next week. Maybe it was a hidden gem. Maybe he was just waiting for his chance, and now he's shining. I mean, it could be.
Maybe
that.
So. Maybe UCLA goes on a tear. Maybe UCLA ends 8-4, and shock the world. I doubt it. I doubt it. Could be wrong, but I doubt.
There's no way that the collective football world was wrong about Penn State.
Listen, not the collective, because there were many of you who said, "I'm not falling for this crap again, James." I, however, wasn't one of those people. I did fall for that crap again, James.
Oh, that's right. I pointed this out. I'm going to do it again. You picked them to win the Big 10.
Sure did.
Yeah, you did.
Sure did. Thought it was their year. Thought they had fixed it. Thought they got it right. They didn't. I got one more clip for you here. All right. Let me be abundantly clear here. I don't really know anything about Theo Vaughn. I also know I'm a 40-year-old guy, and that's not the world for me.
He pops up on my feed a bunch.
Yeah.
I don't know what this says about my feed, but
yeah.
He
is a podcast bro. He's apparently a stand-up comedian who exploded in the podcast world. I don't know a lot about him, and I'm okay with that. It's not my style.
I think of him as the Matt Riddle of podcasting.
I think there's a lot of those, honestly. I think of Joe Rogan as the Matt Riddle of podcasters, but it's subjective. Everybody's got their own form of entertainment. Have at it. It's not for me, whatever. That being said, for the second time in as many years, Theo Vaughn was the guest celebrity picker on College Game Day. Now, I will start with this. I will start with, he's a Vandy guy. They brought him down to Tuscaloosa. All right, I knew it was already going to be a relatively hostile crowd. Number two, the way that Theo Vaughn does comedy via the podcast doesn't really translate well to when he's doing a panel show like College Game Day. All right, fine. I understand it's not necessarily his vibe. And number three, like I said, I'm 40, so his comedy doesn't land with me. However, it was painful to watch. Like, painful to watch. He was trying to tell jokes via story, and you could tell that they didn't land with anybody, but Dez and Pat were laughing hysterically like it was the greatest thing they've ever heard, just, I think, to try to ease the tension, because it just wasn't good. At one point, they asked him for his pick on Texas-Florida, and he immediately went into his breakdown of Vandy, Alabama, and when he got to the end right before he made his pick, Pat had to be like, yeah, we're talking Florida-Texas, we're getting to Vandy. Like, he just wasn't there.
All right, so I didn't see it, but I want to defend a little bit. If you've watched that show forever and then you're on it, maybe there were some nerves.
No, it was just bad. It was bad. I've seen a lot of Game Day pickers.
Was he sitting next to Saban? Because that would make me mess up.
It doesn't.
Sure.
Listen, when they say Texas, Florida, and you go into your Vandy, Alabama pick, which is the game we're here to talk about.
The crowd chanting really loud?
No, it was dead silent because he was not entertaining at all. Now, I will say this. I do think I can give him one reason why that might have happened. Because if you watch Game Day, you know that right before the guest picker goes up to the panel to sit down and be mic'd up and give their thoughts, they do a quick little spot out in the crowd, and they usually have one of the Game Day reporters out there interviewing. Well, and I do apologize. I forget the young lady's name who was reporting out there, but she had Theo, and they're like, you know, they're having their talk, and he's like, oh, I'm so excited to be back, and this, that, and the other, and yada, yada, yada. That's cool. And then this happened. She said, the guys are ready for you, so head them right over there. And he goes, oh, I'm already gone? And she goes, yeah. And he said, and I quote, will I ever see you again? And her response was, and I quote, with dramatic acting talent attached, ooh, I hope not. You know.
Hey, you call your shot. I mean, you take a shot, you're going to be shot down some. Even if it is on national TV, go for it, dude.
Rob Brown used to be a single man. He used to be in his 20s. He used to be a pretty good-looking guy back in the day, all right?
Didn't the mustache happen, and we're all just like...
Well, no, I'd say then it got to the point where I did not metabolize beer the way that I used to back in the day. But Rob Brown used to be an athlete, used to have a six-pack, used to be a pretty handsome feller. And listen, I was never really a guy who, like, approached ladies at the bar. Wasn't my style, wasn't my thing.
They came up to you because you're Rob Brown.
Yeah, I wish that was true, too. That also didn't happen. Rob Brown didn't approach ladies at the bar, but every now and then, with the right combination of liquid courage in the form of a handful of shots of Jägermeister and the right amount of dudes in my circle going, bro, you got this. She's looking at you. She's giving the signs. Rob Brown, make a pass. Hey, go get it. It's a layup, Rob Brown. Every now and then, with the right amount of Jägermeister in the system and the right amount of talking up from the bros, I might make the move, and I might go over and say, hi, I'm Rob Brown. I just wanted to say hello. I saw you over there, and I just wanted to come introduce myself. And I got to tell you, it didn't work way more than it worked.
You never thought for a moment that you guys weren't just messing with you, trying
Lonzo,
to get
because
you.
Not everybody is setting you up to fail. Sometimes you hype the boys up because the boys need the hype. I got the hype. I felt good about myself, and it didn't work more than it worked. It changed, young men out there, join a rock and roll band. It changed when I got into a band. But I can tell you that I do remember a few times that it definitely didn't work. And I can tell you that when you make the pass and it does not work, it can impact you mentally, all right? It can throw you off your game. I assume it's like being a quarterback and getting absolutely sack hammered on the very first play of the game. You might have come in with all the confidence in the world, but if you get your bleep rocked on the first snap, you're probably not going to carry the same confidence to the rest of the contest.
Yeah, but do you regret? Do you regret going for it?
Yeah, I think that there are people who are okay with rejection. I don't think there's anybody who likes it. And certainly nobody who likes it when it is 1,000% in front of not just a bar full of people. Like, it's one thing when you make a pass at Juana's Pagoda's beach bar and you get told no, but you're off at the sidebar and you can walk away. And, like, maybe the boys saw it, but, like, that's it, and they'll give you a little help. It's another thing to straight up ask a very attractive lady on national television on the most watched college football show on planet Earth, am I ever going? Not even, do you want to grab a drink? Can I buy you a cocktail? Would you like to go to dinner? No, no, no. Just straight up, will I ever see you again? And on national TV, she grabbed the mic and went, oh, I hope not. So my point here is, yeah, he was real bad on the panel, but my man also just got shot down by a howitzer on national television, the most watched college football game day show on Saturdays.
So Juan Pagoda, do you remember specifically who that was and what she looked like? And
Juana's Pagoda is the name of the bar.
Okay, I was close.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
Juana's Pagoda is the name of the bar that Rob Brown very much frequented, both as a rock and roll icon. And it's just a regular dude who was out drinking on a Tuesday. And I can tell you from living that life.
I love the hand gestures when you call yourself an icon.
I can tell you by living that life that the difference in pulling a will I ever see you again when you're just a dude drinking on a Tuesday and a will I see you again when you're a guy that just came off the stage playing guitar in front of a packed house. A lot more I hope so's from the ladies after a concert than I hope so's on a random Tuesday night. A lot more I hope not's on a Tuesday, but nobody's there. This man just caught a fat L on a nationally ranking program. All I'm saying is I kind of get where maybe it went wrong for right. Theo Vaughn, is all I'm
Keegan
saying.
Keegan has said that her name is Jess Sims.
Jess Sims. Shout out Jess Sims, because I think there's a lot of ladies in that spot who would have been like, I don't want to make this uncomfortable for our celebrity guest picker, and been like, we'll see, Theo Vaughn.
There might have been some that was like, oh, yeah, okay.
I will also say this. Entertainment is subjective. Like what you like. I am not here to judge him. If there's anything that compels you after that and some of the other stuff I've heard, if there's anything that compels you to go seek out Theo Vaughn content, yes, we just probably aren't going to see eye to eye on entertainment value. That's all I'm going to say. Good on Jeff Sims for absolutely laying the smack down on this cat on national TV.
That was bad, though.
Spectacular. Really, yeah. I loved it. All right, let's take a break. When we come back here in just a minute, let's talk some NFL. The Panthers get the win. It was a bit of a shocking weekend across the National Football League. We'll talk about some of the more unexpected results, including the Patriots getting a road win over Buffalo. And then we'll talk to John Blau to wrap up this hour of the Post and Courier, get his thoughts on what went right and what went wrong for Clemson in their win over the North Carolina Tar Heels and what they need to roll into next week against BC. That's all coming up on the Rob Brown Show in the Fan Upstate.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm not going to say the NFL was full-on drunk yesterday, but it definitely had a pretty solid buzz going throughout the course of the day. 49ers banged up, shorthanded, still beat the LA Rams 26-23 back on Thursday. That led into a weekend. Spencer Rattler got his first dub, 26-14 over the Giants yesterday, partially because Raheed Shaheed, 4 grabs, 114, and a touchdown. We mentioned and discussed and broke down earlier the 27-24 win for the Carolina Panthers over the Miami Dolphins because of Rico Dowdle, 23 totes, 206, and a tutty in that one. The Vikings, 21-17 winners in London over the Cleveland Browns. I want to get to that one for just a brief second. Because in this game, there was a field goal that was no good. And it looked weird on TV. It looked really weird on TV. I could not figure out why it was that it looked so odd. And the more I went back and looked at it, the more I came to the realization that the field goal attempt very clearly hit a camera wire that was hanging out over the field. The Vikings had an opportunity to make a field goal, and they did win the game, so I guess it didn't matter all that much. But in the fourth quarter, Will Richard came out, a 51-yard field goal on the line that would have tied the game at the time at 17 apiece. The kick ended up being wide right. And as I watched it, I thought, I've seen a lot of field goal efforts that, you know, you'll see them tail off. Sometimes you'll see them kind of knuckleball through the air. You'll see based on how the kicker hits the ball, you'll see some weird movement out of a football. Obviously, with the oval shape and the laces on it, Like, there's always going to be some weird aerodynamics to the football. But this one had some weird movement to it. I went and I watched it a couple more times after it happened. Like, rewinded that kick because I thought, something had to have happened here. I think it probably would have still been wide right, but you never know. Maybe it tails off back to the inside. This thing skyrocketed to the right. Well, it turns out that it hit the wire on the Skycam. Like, clearly and evidently hit the wire on the Skycam upon a rewatch. And so it led me to the question, in that moment in which had the referees blown the whistle and said, dead ball, the field goal kick hit the wire of the camera, and it would have been an automatic re-kick of the try. If we're going to have an NFL HQ that is responsible in New York City for watching these games, is responsible for buzzing the referees and saying, hey, this happened and you missed it. That's wrong. You got that call wrong. This call happened. Here's the technical thing that we need to change about the clock or the ruling or whatever. And they missed that? I mean, forget the referees that are standing under the goalpost. Specifically in this case, the one that is stage left, TV right, at whom the ball was on a direct flight. Who, to me, I don't know how you're not watching the football in that moment when your job is to determine, does it go over the upright or not? How are you not tracking the ball to look up and see if it goes over the upright or not? And see, oh, it kind of hit the wire. No, it didn't kind of hit the wire. It hit the wire, definitively. And even if that doesn't happen, how in the world do we not have somebody at NFL HQ that goes, hey guys, that hit the wire. That can't happen.
The wire's like the ceiling, right? It counts as a part of the stadium.
That's if the ball is interfered with, the referees are part of the field. If anything in the stadium, it's like when I can't remember who it was, but the punter hit the Jumbotron in Dallas. You re-kick that. That is re-kicked. The stadium, the facility cannot interfere in the play. The officials are part of the play. If you throw a ball and it hits the ref, that is an incomplete pass. But the facility is not part of the field of play. So if you throw a ball and it hits the Skycam or whatever, that is OB. Not the goalpost, that's part of the field. But the facility, the Jumbotron, anything that's hanging down, whatever, that would be an auto re-kick. So my question is, how do the folks in NFL HQ, how do they A, miss that, and B, not give Minnesota another opportunity at that? The Browns didn't do anything to block that kick. The facility did. That can't happen. Now, I've seen a lot of people that have laid on the this is why we should not be playing NFL games abroad stuff. Listen, that's not going anywhere. The NFL wants international teams. This isn't a secret. They haven't tried to make it a secret. They want international teams. And part of the way that they do that is by using regular season NFL games to grow their fan bases overseas. You'll notice London, obviously, has gotten the most games of anyone. This is why I've said, like, London's getting a football team. It is not a matter of if, it is a matter of when. London's getting a team. This is not going to change whether you think the facilities are good or bad or not. Players have been complaining about soccer pitches since we started playing there. But forget all that. This is nothing to do with international games or whatever. They're not going anywhere. And as they pick up more, those stadiums will begin to incorporate more traditional American football fields. They've got the ability and the resources. The problem is if HQ is going to be in charge of getting these things right and they miss something that painfully obvious, I kind of got a problem with that. I kind of have an issue with that. The Eagles take their first loss of the season. The Denver Broncos at one point were trailing 17-3. And then they reeled off 18 unanswered in the fourth quarter behind Bo Nix. I do have a question about this football team, the Philadelphia Eagles. And credit for Bo Nix and the Broncos for getting it done. Bo Nix, 24 of 39, 242 in a tutty. Jalen Hurts, 23 of 38, 282 scores. I do have a question. Saquon Barkley is on this football team last I checked. And I'm waiting. Okay, we have that confirmed. Saquon Barkley is still on this football team. At this point, I have to assume that something was wrong with Saquon Barkley because I have to ask the question, in what world do I have Jalen Hurts throwing the ball 38 times and Saquon Barkley running it 6? And it's not just Saquon. The Eagles as a team ran the ball 11 times. They threw it 38. I got to tell you, I got an issue with Nick Sirianni here. Because, and I was on the Infinity Sports Network on Sunday, and one of the picks that I gave was, give me the Eagles and the Broncos the under. Now, it still ended up cashing, and I feel pretty good about that. It was at like 41. They finished at 38. But it didn't cash for the reason I thought it was going to cash. I thought it was going to cash because I was going to say the Eagles' offense, which has been described all year long as boring, and that is because, and again, subjective, but I've done the research, it is boring. The Eagles' offense has been described as boring. But then we got word that A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith have both expressed disappointment in their utilization within the Eagles' offense. Effectively, to the shock of nobody, wide receivers would very much like you to throw them the ball, please. And it's understandable why. Wide receivers are judged specifically, explicitly, uniquely, and only on their numbers. When it's contract time, they want to be able to walk into an owner's office with their agent and say, I went for 1,700 receiving yards, 22 touchdowns last year. You got to pay me, dog. And if they're not getting paid, it's probably because they don't have numbers. So the argument was Smith and Brown are very upset about their usage. And I said to Gallo on Saturday or on Sunday morning on Infinity Sports Network, if I'm Nick Sirianni, I'm not changing anything. I'm going, guys, I know you're upset and I know it's going to hurt you. And I know that we'll have to have a discussion about this at some point, but we are 4-0 in the NFC. We are in the driver's seat for the one seed. We are in the driver's seat for a Super Bowl repeat. You're just going to have to deal with it until we have to change it, until someone stops us. Instead, he gave them what they wanted. They threw the ball 38 times, and what happened? They lost to the Broncos. Dude, listen. You've got to keep your players happy. But at the same time, you better make sure you got guys that are happy when they're on a 4-0 football team aiming for a Super Bowl repeat more than, yeah, we lost, but I got 111 yards and a touchdown. I wish you the best, Philly, because what are you going to do? Do you go back to running it 38 times next week and upset them more? I don't know. Here's what I do know. John Blau of the Post and Courier joins us in the next segment to break down the Clemson win over North Carolina. That is next on the Rob Brown Show in the Fan Upstate.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly you know what why people it's not, outside of Cleveland you know, think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
The Rob Brown Show back on your radio. It's the Fan Upstate. Rob Brown, the great one, Lonzo, and you joining us now on the program as he is kind enough and gracious enough to do every single Monday at 8:40 a.m. He covers the Clemson Tiger Athletic Department for the Post and Courier. John Blau joining us here on the show. And I imagine, John, interacting with the Clemson fans the last couple of days slightly more pleasant than the last 2 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah, no, nobody's asking Dabo to be fired. So I think we're in a good place, I think.
It is a good spot. It was a get right game. It was an opportunity to go out there and kind of click. They did do that, John Blau, but I will start with the discussion we've had on the show this morning. On the sliding scale of truth, on which end, one extreme is Clemson looks like the Clemson we expected, and on the other end is North Carolina is a really bad football team that's going through it right now. Where do you think the truth lies on that scale? More towards that's Clemson and they are back and we're going to see this team do that the rest of the year, or they took advantage of a really bad football team?
Yeah, I would just put it like right dead center in the middle of that spectrum. I do think UNC, offensive line, not very good. Defense altogether, not very good. There are some weaknesses there that Clemson definitely exploited. Same time, I mean, you have to give Clemson credit. I mean, they scored 27 points against Troy because they didn't execute. They scored 28 points in a quarter against North Carolina because they executed. So, Dabo Sweeney is somewhat to a lot correct when he says that it's just football stuff. We have to do football stuff better. We have to block better. We have to, obviously, Cade's got to find his receivers. Receivers have to catch the ball. They're very simple things, and they did those simple things better. Cade seemed to get the ball out with some rhythm and some timing. Receivers caught the ball. Obviously, that, Antonio Williams double pass to T.J. Moore really got some good juices flowing. And defensively, obviously, you had Tom Allen down the field. Felt like he brought some juice, and the defense played better. The defensive line, again, against a not very good offensive line, really dominated at the point of attack. So I'm not going to say Clemson's fully back. I think you want to see it a couple games in a row, and you want to see it against some better competition. But I think at the same time, you could say they're definitely way better than they were in terms of the team that we saw that just couldn't execute simple things.
Talk to me about Cade Klubnik, because obviously, I mean, guy was on fire, 22 of 24 through 4 touchdown passes in this game. It looked more like the Cade Klubnik that we have come to expect, or at least that Clemson fans expected coming into the season, again, against the North Carolina defense that is just abysmal. But John Blau, as the old expression goes, sometimes you've just got to see one go in. For a guy that felt like he was entering the year with an abundance of confidence, and then it kind of felt like maybe it was wavering a little bit, do you think that that lit the fuse on Cade Klubnik becoming the guy that Dabo Sweeney told us that he could be before the season started?
Yeah, I just think he made a lot of better decisions. I mean, I remember one Wesco, catch and run where literally just, dumping it kind of 8 yards, 10 yards up the field over the middle, and the guy finds an alley and goes for 30, 40 yards. And that's all you have to do as a quarterback. You don't have to make amazing, tight window throws all the time. You just got to find the guy that's open and let him make a play. And that's what Cade did. And Cade said it after the game, I didn't have to be Superman out there. I just had to, take what was there. And I think, I don't know if he would admit it, but I think in those first 3 or 4 games, he was pressing a little bit. I think he was trying to make too much happen at times. Obviously, go back to the 3rd-and-1, 4th-and-1 against Syracuse, where on the 3rd down, he pulls the ball. He should just handed it off to Adam Randall. It felt like he made better decisions in the run game as well a few times. Didn't run it a ton, but when it was there, he made good decisions there. So I think he's just back to kind of playing within himself. Trust in his receivers. Receivers making plays for him. And like you said, I think when you get a few that go in, those layups, you start to, just kind of see the game better, a little more comfortable, and you play better. So, great performance. I mean, obviously the 2 incompletions I think were almost picked off, but, at the end of the day they weren't. So, pretty good day, obviously. Great day for Cade Klubnik.
John Blau of the Post and Courier joining us here on the Rob Brown Show. I'm glad you brought up the run game, John. It very much felt like Clemson kind of wanted to find its identity, find its ability to throw the football, get Cade Klubnik going. But I have leaned on, with the row of quarterbacks you've got coming up after Boston College, you've got Mensa, you've got Castellanos, you've got Sellers, you've got Miller Moss at Louisville, the ability to run the football, to control the game, to control time of possession, to keep quarterbacks on the bench becomes more impressive the further we go down the schedule. We did not see, I think, either the development of or the opportunity for the run game to kind of find its footing. Do you think we will see that in Boston College, or is Clemson going to play with the identity of what we saw against North Carolina Saturday moving forward?
Yeah, I think it's just what was working, obviously, at UNC. And yeah, that defense Dabo was talking about with the, you know, double pass, how reactive they were in terms of, you know, coming behind the line of scrimmage, really, you know, getting upfield. They kind of took advantage of that, I think, in a few situations. And so I think this game just worked to their favor in terms of throwing it out. But, yeah, no, I would think that, yeah, at Boston College, and, you know, Dabo was talking about always a big, physical, strong football team, I think you're going to want to get that run game established a little bit more. You know, obviously, Adam Randall was still productive last game. It was just as a receiver. I mean, at 73 yards receiving, scored a bunch of touchdowns. So, yeah, I think that you still want to get that in a better place. You want to be able to, as Garrett Riley calls, run the dirt raid, establish that, which, again, I think hurt them in some of the earlier games against Syracuse and obviously Georgia Tech, just not, you know, and LSU, obviously, in the opener, just getting away from running the ball. So, yeah, no, I would think that we're not going to see this type of air it out every single week. I do think that as, you know, Gideon Davidson continues to make some steps and obviously Adam Randall continues to get comfortable in kind of the mesh point and its timing in terms of getting to the line, I think you'll continue to see that developed because I think you need it, like you said, to keep some of those opposing offenses off the field.
You know, I kind of feel the same way on the other side of the football. You brought up Tom Allen and that defense, John Blau. This is a North Carolina offense that just doesn't have it. Wide receivers that can't get separation, not much in the way of the run game. Ton of respect for Max Johnson for coming back from that leg injury he sustained last year, going through the surgery, going through the therapy and playing. But obviously, he's not the best quarterback that this team will play all year. It kind of felt on the defensive side of the football the same way. Let's take advantage of what their weaknesses are. Let's play the game we need to play to prevent them from doing anything. 3 points through three and a half quarters. Kind of gave up a garbage touchdown late in this one. What was your takeaway on the defensive side of the football, knowing that the quality of quarterbacks is only going to increase after Boston College?
Yeah, I think the main emphasis for them was making sure that UNC did not run the ball. Damon June, their freshman running back, has had some big games to hold him to 5 for, you know, 16 yards. And obviously some of that is UNC got so far behind they had to pass the ball more. But, again, at the point of attack in those situations where Clemson was, you know, defeating the run, I mean, for the most part, there were a couple instances where they got a couple of gashes on them. But they were pushing guys back. Again, I don't know how much of that is, again, USC's offensive line, kind of where they're at. But to see that was probably one of the first games this year, honestly, where I can point to it and say, you know, I saw Stephylon Green, I saw DeMonte Capehart, I saw T.J. Parker even flash at times and get more into the backfield and create some havoc there. I think that was positive. Yeah, as far as the passing game, yeah, I don't think Max Johnson, I don't think those receivers are really going to stress Clemson that much. But it all starts in the trenches in terms of you being able to make sure teams aren't on schedule, put them in second and third downs and long, and then you can get a pass rush from a Will Help, a T.J. Parker, and obviously – you know, you help your corners in terms of what, you know, what the receivers are doing is kind of simplified because, you know, they're trying to pick up however many yards. So I think the way they defended the run, I think, is a step forward. We'll have to see, like you said, down the line against some of these better quarterbacks, how they fare.
The good news, John Blau, and we talked about this going into last week, is after the 1-3 start, the bye week came at a great time. If you're going to have Carolina and Boston College on the schedule, having them back-to-back, an opportunity to kind of reset, reestablish the identity is a good move or is a good opportunity for Clemson. So with that being said, what does that Boston College game look like this weekend? Is it kind of stick with fundamentals? Do we see Clemson come out and try to light the scoreboard on fire to up the energy around the franchise? What is this game going to look like on Saturday?
Yeah, it's interesting. It was kind of funny talking to Antonio Williams after the game. He was trying to say, hey, guys, like, I can't pass the ball anymore. Like, that's never going to happen again. Like, trying to, you know, joke to tell teams that don't prepare for the double pass because we're never doing it again. But at the end of the day, I think playing free and loose like they did, you know, throwing that on the first play, 75-yard touchdown, I think really helped. And so whatever you can do to get the juices flowing in a positive direction, you know, I think it's good. I don't know if you see like a, you know, a double pass, you see Tate Klubnik coming out of the backfield, or I don't know what they might try, but I think you try to, you know, have fun and continue to just make plays and get this team playing confident. Because, again, confidence was the thing that was sorely lacking in the first 4 weeks of the season. Got it back a little bit. So whatever you have to do, whether that's ground and pound, whether that's air it out, do whatever you have to do to kind of get these guys playing confident and free and loose. That'll be up to the coaching staff to decide what that looks like. But I think they should, obviously want to keep that going.
Yeah, without a doubt. What was the mentality, the attitude of the fellas? I mean, on one hand, like, I know there still has to be some disappointment about a team that entered the season with national championship aspirations to be in a spot where even their head coach comes out, one of the most optimistic people in football, and says, like, we can't win a title, but we can go out and still continue to write our story. But also that had to feel good from a bounce back perspective of, we knew that this was in us the whole time, and maybe it took us too long to get here, we're there. What was the attitude in the locker room in the postgame presser from the actual football players after that win?
Yeah, I mean, TJ Moore, we talked to him about the locker room. He says, you know, music was blaring before they even entered. And obviously Dabo Swinney says, you know, we win, we dance, and the fun's in the winning and all that. So, yeah, they were much, much, you know, happier. Obviously, it did feel like a weight was kind of lifted from their shoulders or their chest, or whatever you want to say there. You know, Dabo Swinney was probably one of the, you know, the chipperest press conference we've seen from him after a game. Obviously, just so much doom and gloom in those first 4 weeks. So, yeah, no, I think they were all, you know, obviously just, I think, relieved, happy, some combination of that to finally have won a football game. You know, Kate Klubnik was saying before, coming into the week, that, you know, we're not going anywhere. And he felt like, and he reiterated that after the game, that it kind of shows that we're not going anywhere. They're going to try to make the best of this as they can, you know, the rest of the season, the best of it is in whatever way they can. Can't get those words out of my mouth. And so, yeah, it was obviously a much happier feeling, and we'll see if they can kind of maintain that. And I would think against Boston College, again, a team that got beat 48-7 by Pitt, I mean, this should be a game, a week, where you keep that going. And the confidence just continues to build from there.
John Blau covers the Clemson Athletic Department for the Post and Courier. Kind enough to give us a few minutes every single Monday at 8:40 a.m. John, my man, go enjoy the victory this week. We will talk to you next week after the BC game, partner.
Sounds good. Thanks, Rob.
You got it. John Blau of the Post and Courier. Make sure if you're a Clemson fan, you are following him on X at John Blau, B-L-A-A-U, B-L-A-U, just the one A. I'm dumb. John B-L-A-U on X. Now, follow Lonzo through the next 60 seconds of your life and enjoy this unadulterated sports bliss.
Not to be confused with Alexa Bliss, totally different thing. The Carolina Panthers got win number 2 with the 27-24 defeat of the Miami Dolphins. Former Gamecock Rico Dowdle showed out, carrying 23 times for 206 yards and a touchdown and 3 grabs for 28 yards. Bryce Young completed 19 of 30 passes for 198 yards and a pair of touchdowns after a rough start with a pick and a fumble. Carolina is back home this week, hosting Dallas on Sunday. The AP Top 25 is out with some dramatic changes. Ohio State remains number 1. Miami moves to 2 ahead of Oregon. Ole Miss stays at 4, while Texas A&M cracks the top 5 for the first time. Oklahoma is number 6. Indiana moves up to 7 ahead of Alabama, Texas Tech, and Georgia. Another road course, another win for Shane Van Gisbergen, who claimed the checkered flag at Charlotte's Roval course yesterday. The win is his 5th consecutive on road or street courses.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah, you're seeing exactly,
you know,
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland,
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.